Welcome back to the Balance is Bullshit podcast, the real stories of blending motherhood and career, where we're sitting down with mamas and caregivers that are making waves in their career. And we get the unvarnished version of what it's like, their trade-offs, the epiphanies, the milestones. Whether you're here because it's a tough day, you're celebrating, or you want to get tools to craft your most fulfilled life, we've got you. And remember, you're welcome here as your whole self, not just your best self. Let's get to today's episode.
Jess, I'm really so happy you're here again. We've got a great episode for you today. I had a chance to sit down with Hannah Burns Dunham, and Hannah is fantastic. I've been following her for some time now on LinkedIn. She posts every single day about her experiences in a male-dominated industry and how she found her voice and now helps others advocate for themselves, particularly women in the STEM field. So I'm thrilled to have her, and we had a fun conversation. It was the first time we had ever connected, but there was just such a natural flow, and I could relate so much to so many of the things that she said. Some of my key takeaways, she talks about this concept of defining your capacity and your max capacity. And her husband really did that together to determine how many kids they were going to have. Spoiler alert, one. They wanted to travel, they wanted to build two businesses, continue to do what they need to do to be healthy. And so that was their max capacity. I thought it was a really interesting concept that so many could benefit from. We also dug into what I feel like is a bit of an uncomfortable or ugly truth around having to assimilate into an environment where you don't always feel authentically you, or you don't off the bat feel like you belong. No one around looks like you or sounds like you, but you have a job to do. How do you make that work? And over time, step into your authenticity in a way that's additive and evolving of the culture that you're in. I thought it was a great conversation, and it's definitely had me thinking quite a bit post conversation. So I'm excited for you to hear it and hear what you think. Other than that, my gosh, there's so much here. One of my favorite quotes from Hannah was, "They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care." Quite the leadership concept, no matter what industry or type of team or type of leader you are. It's about the human first. We are human. When you're leading humans. They want to know you care. So how do you do that? How do you step into a team as a new leader and not only get them to like you, because that's not what it's about, get them to respect you and earn their trust? Because once you have that, dynamics change and things get a lot easier. And for me, frankly, more meaningful. So I'm thrilled. There's so many more things that I could say about this episode, but I want you to enjoy and listen and hear it from Hannah herself. So ahead of jumping in, I'll just share with you from a more formal bio perspective. Hannah is a chemical engineer, and she's worked in the pulp and paper industry for 8 years. She left manufacturing to be a stay-at-home mom in 2021 while pursuing a master's in industrial and organizational psychology. And Hannah started Climbing Trees Consulting in 2003 to provide coaching and mentoring services for female engineers navigating male-dominated industries. She's got a newsletter that you're going to have to sign up for, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the conversation. Tag us. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
Thanks for joining.
I'm great.
I'm literally great today. Like, you know, when you're having a day and you're just like, my energy's a little off today. I was so excited for this conversation. I'm like feeling happy today. And that's not always the case, but it is today.
I love that.
How are you?
I'm good. We woke up in the South this morning to like 30 degree weather, which was strange because everybody was like getting their gardens planted this weekend and then pulling them in like last night.
in true spirit of this podcast, I know that you are graciously sitting down to talk with us and hanging out with the baby monitor with your little one taking a nap. So thank you for being here and spending the time with us.
Mm-hmm. Typically how most of my afternoons go once I get her home from school, she's napping while I'm trying to get some work done. So
hustling. Yep, totally. I'm excited to just get to know you. I reached out to Hannah after finding you and following you for some time on LinkedIn. And I mean, gosh, every single day that I read your posts, I find myself nodding and relating to some, if not all, of what you're saying. And I am very appreciative that you are willing to share with such vulnerability and honesty in a forum that's frankly not always, you know, it is oftentimes showing the highlights or the, you know, mm-hmm. what's going well in your career. And yours are very vulnerable and they're honest and they're constructive in how you kind of change your situation. So anyway, mm-hmm. I'm so excited for you to be here.
Thank you so much.
And before we dive into all the things, your career and what you're up to now, would love to just get to know you, the human, and who Hannah is. So would you kind of start by, feel free to say hello and mm-hmm. introduce yourself in a way that you want to share with the group, but would love to know a little bit about how you grew up and you know, what parts of that makes you you.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm Hannah. Hello, everybody. I grew up in the South. I have 5 brothers and sisters. So wow. I'm the 5th of 6 kids. There's 5 girls and 1 boy. So one slightly drunken night in New York City with all my sisters, we all got like tattoos of the number that we are in line. Yeah. We could not convince my brother to do it, but we're working on his wife. We thought that she would be like a good fill-in for number 4. We'll see.
I love it.
Jury's out on that. But we're a big like running family. That's always been like the number one. Like I know like people always kind of hate on the like turkey trot family on like Thanksgiving, but that's us. I don't know like any other way to say it. We love to like hike. We grew up going to the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. So very like big outdoorsy family. My siblings are all over the world now. Or all over the country, I guess, New York, LA, Austin, Telluride, Atlanta, and then we're in Birmingham. So wow. I have like an Airbnb basically in every major city yes. in America that I would want to go visit, which is really fun. I have a 2-year-old little girl and my husband and I have been together for what feels like sometimes 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Since I was, we met actually in the paper mill when I started working there in college. So
wow.
very fun paper mill romance. We have a 2-year-old little girl named Delilah and a rescue dog named Riley. And you might hear her little pitter patter around my office at some point during this podcast. That's her.
5. One of 6 and you're number 5.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like growing up with that many siblings? Like what's the age span and how far apart are you?
So my oldest sister is 19 years older than my little sister. So yeah, there's nearly 20 years between us. And then my little sister and I are best friends in the world. And like, we're 7 years apart. So there are some big gaps between us all. And it was, you know, as chaotic as you would imagine having 6 kids in one house. But I think the age separation between us like did help out. Whereas like, you know, when I was growing up or when I was little, like my oldest sister was, you know, in her high school years. So she was very much like a second mom to me versus like a sister, you know, and she, you know, with that many kids, you kind of have to, everyone has to help out a little bit more than I think maybe my daughter would have to as a single kid. So it was chaotic and fun. We had a massive like suburban that held all of us. I remember like going through a Wendy's drive-thru and like my dad trying to spit out the orders for all of us and then being literally like, that's too much food. Like we've never had somebody order this much food in one sitting. So yeah.
And the cleanup must have been, that cleanup of the Suburban after a road trip or a must have been fun. Yeah. I think about the chaos with two, and it's just that many. It's, you know, so fun, I'm sure, and a lot.
It was a lot, for sure. Definitely had to find my voice early in order to make myself known in the family, I think.
What did that look like when you were little?
Well, I didn't really know how to regulate it as well as I maybe do now. I was very, very stubborn and like would have kind of like sharp anger, you know, like bursts of anger and stuff like that. But I was very like, my brother's 2 years older than me, so I ran with him a lot, and he very much like, you know, made me kind of a little bit tougher, I think, than I probably would have been without him. So yeah, I mean, at some point I was very much like the observant kid, just kind of always like taking the temperature and stuff like that. But if something like made me mad or like I really wanted to stand up for myself, I've always had like a switch that could flip, that where I was like, everybody listen to me, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah. Have you found that experience and needing to, one, being the observer, but then also needing to find your voice earlier and shout to know you're there, has that translated at all into who you are as an adult and kind of how you've approached your career or motherhood?
Yes. Absolutely. So I'm a chemical engineer, and I spent 10 years in pulp and paper manufacturing. So I've never worked with anybody other than large groups of men. I'm usually one of the only females. So it worked well for me in that I had an idea from an early age of how to stand up for myself when it really mattered. But I struggled a lot, like, you know, in one-to-ones with my boss, or like getting to know, you know, men that were my dad's age and stuff like that. So I could always like kind of stand up for myself in the big moments where it mattered, but I struggled with like kind of the confidence that came with like, you know, just having more and more experience in the industry. So, and that, you know, that came over time, but yeah, the last job I had, I was the department manager of 120 people. And I think I had two females on my whole, in that whole team. So one was an operator, one was my assistant. So it was definitely, you know, not an industry I ever saw myself being in, but I learned so, so, so much from that. So.
Well, and it feels like you were, I mean, while you also learned, you had this innate ability based on your upbringing to know that your voice was there. You just needed to find it and use it in the right way in this setting. So that's a beautiful, we're going to get to your career, and I'm so excited to talk to you about it. One other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about it, you're now a mom, Delilah's too.
Yeah.
What I know, one of the things that happened to me when I became a parent, and even still to this day, I still think about like, my gosh, I have so much appreciation for my parents and what they did. Like, how did your experience as a kid translate to how you show up as a mom?
Yeah, interestingly, like, I think the biggest shocker to most people, especially to my mother, is that we're only having one child. Like, we're done after the one, which a lot of people find interesting because I'm one of six. And it wasn't because I didn't love having six, but I really like this idea of like, what is your capacity? And personally, with like growing businesses with my husband and I and having a two-year-old, we're at max capacity. And like, our, you know, wanting to like still travel and wanting to like have friends in our lives and like all those things taken into account, like we know that one is like our sweet spot, and we don't feel like stressing ourselves out to have another one in order to just give her a sibling, because we feel like that's something that society tells us we should do. So that's like the biggest one I take away from my childhood that has like played out in a very like practical way now. I think, you know, I think that the other thing is just, yeah, I think that once you become a mom, you can kind of look at your own parents with a lot more grace than you would have ever like given them previously. And you have a new respect for like the amount of love that they have for you. And like, even in the tough moments and like the, you know, the stretches of time where things were maybe difficult between you, like, you know that there is no greater love than what they have for me. And I can see things like in a maybe more graceful light because of that. I'm sure you probably
have experienced this. Oh, Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's so much of that resonates with me. And I am curious. I love that concept of, you know, what's your max capacity?
Yeah.
Did you always know that? Or is that something that you and your husband kind of determined together, mm-hmm. came to the conclusion after, before? Like, how did you get to being able to define what that max capacity or that ideal scenario looks like for you? Because I think, yeah, a lot of people that will listen to this, you know, some have already, you know, done the raising of their children and they're kind of in a different stage. Some are family planning, some are just starting their career, yeah, like, and at different stages. How did you get there?
Yeah. I mean, we were on the fence about having children to begin with. And so, and then, you know how it goes, like we had a nephew that was born and we were like, all right, we're doing this. Like as soon as you hold them for the first time, you're like, I got to have one of these. Like, yeah. So that kind of set us off on the journey of like deciding we wanted to have kids. And then, you know, so at that point we knew like it was going to be one or two, and we felt very much the like societal pressure of it being, if it needing to be two, because everyone's like, you don't want them to be in like the only child syndrome or like all of that stuff. That's what I don't believe to be true. I think it depends on how you raise them, but all that to say, then like when we had her and I stayed at home with her for a while and then was kind of not fulfilled by that. She was bored as all get out with me at 15 or 18 months, you know? And like, you know, I think we just looked at like, what do we want to do in our lives? Like, what is important to us? Traveling is really important to us. What does that look like with one kid? What does it look like when we add another or another? Like, what feels comfortable to us? Like, it doesn't matter what other people are able to do. Like, you may be perfectly a pro at traveling with two kids. That does not mean that I'm a pro at traveling with two kids or that I ever could be. And then something as simple as like, you know, my daughter goes down for naps in the afternoons, like, and on Sundays when she does that, I get to lay in bed if I want to. Like, and I think about like, that's important to me to have, like, I'm an introvert at heart. I never stop talking now, but like, I truly am an introvert at heart. And like, I need time to regroup and like have space to myself. And when I don't, I know that not the best versions of me come out. So what does it look like for me to be able to protect that, like protect what I need to, in order to be mentally healthy? And that's to have time to myself every single week. Can I do that with two kids? Maybe, but right now I know I can do it with one. So I'm like perfectly happy to stay in this sweet spot of like where I know I'm getting what I need. My husband's getting what he needs. My daughter is getting what she needs. So, you know, maybe that'll change in a few years. I'm open to that possibility, or maybe it doesn't, but like, that's where we're at right now and how we came
and
up with
it. And either way,
yes,
I mean, I think that's the beauty of what you're saying is that it was yours to design and yours to choose.
100%.
Yeah. And yours to change if you want to change it. Yeah. And yeah, yeah, I really respect that. And it makes a ton of sense. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I've just been really hung up on this idea lately that like often we choose things because we feel like it's expected of us and we end up, mm-hmm, down the path that we never even like saw for ourselves. And like, A, I don't want that for myself anymore. I think I've like been down that road many times. But then also like when you do make a decision for yourself, I think like giving yourself the permission for that decision to not always be the right one for you. Like just because you make it today doesn't mean it's right for you tomorrow. And like, that's okay. You get, yeah, to do whatever you want. Like, you know, that like that idea has just been like playing on repeat in my head a lot lately. So.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you say that, the thing that pops into my head is, I don't want my girls to do what they feel like they should do. I want them to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And part of that is me showing them what that looks like, and their dad showing them what that looks like, and the people around them showing them that you can, one, change, you can, two, mm-hmm, choose, you know, the direction you go in, and you don't have to, you know, hopefully these norms don't feel, you know, we don't put on our kids the norms and the pressure that we felt Again, not that our parents in any way did that intentionally, but the society did,
yeah,
you know?
Very much societal. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for sharing that. You mentioned in that course of conversation about staying home with your daughter. And I feel like it's a good kind of transition to talking a little bit about the decisions and some of the paths in your career, because you did have and still do have and invest in growing that career, but you've also taken a step back. And one of the posts that I loved the most, which I'll butcher, so I'll let you talk about, but is kind of knowing why people decide to take a break from work. Yeah. And it's not always what you think it is. So yeah. I'd love to just talk to you. So you pursued chemical engineering in school.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos to you.
Thank you. I'm not sure how I ended up here sometimes.
I look at my kids that are like, or my older daughter who's like loving math. I look at my husband who's also a chemical engineer by school and by trade. And I have so much awe. Math and science were just not my jam.
I think I got C's and D's in every chemistry class I ever took. So like, let's be honest about that.
Yeah. So why chemical engineering? Like, how'd you find that path? If that wasn't even coming naturally to you.
Yeah. I mean, I was good at math and kind of always had been, and I enjoyed it, but I really to be honest with you, it's kind of on a whim a little bit. I knew that I wanted to be an engineer. I had put a lot of, you know, so my grandfather was an engineer and he was like the most well-respected man that I knew. And he traveled all over the world doing what he did and everything. And like, that to me was like the gold standard of like what you could become. And I didn't really know his path at all. And so when I literally was at Camp War Eagle, I went to Auburn University. It was like the summertime camp where you'd like pick your major on a drop-down menu. It was like aerospace. My brother had tried that and hated it. And then the electrical, that's what my grandfather was. So I was like, let's try something else. And I think like the next one was chemical. And I was like, let's try it. Like, and I just figured like, I'll change it later on if this doesn't work out, if it's not for me. Yep. But then I'm very, very competitive. And, you know, once I started hearing people say like, well, this is the hardest major at Auburn, I was like, I'm in, like, I don't know what I have to do to graduate. But more than that, I also like started meeting my best friends in the world, my three best guy friends. Like, you know, I lived with one of them after college for a while. We worked together at the mill in Selma, like, you know, and then once I'm in with them, I was like, I wouldn't go anywhere without them. So either we're all changing majors or I'm sticking this out and y'all are helping me. And that's what happened. Like, I just found really good community that was willing to like walk through the difficult nights of studying for those tests with me. So yeah, I owe a lot to them.
Isn't that what it's all about? Like, isn't that it? Like the community you create?
Totally. I mean, throughout my whole life, that's like the highs of my life always involve some sort of like meaningful community that I've been a part of, for sure.
Totally. Well, congrats on graduating. And not only graduating, but making a really successful career out of that choice. What was that like? What, mm-hmm. you know, what was, you know, you went into an incredibly male dominated environment in school, kind of curious about the inclusivity there, but then you stayed in that environment and maybe maybe that in that space, because so many coming out of schooling, the demographics coming out of schooling, then maybe it translates into the workplace. So maybe it's all over, but anyway, you stayed in a space that was really male dominated. Like what was, as a woman, in that space, what was it like? How inclusive was it?
I guess like when I was maybe 20, I started working like in college. I started a co-op term at a paper mill, on a whim. Like, it's just kind of funny how life like weaves you through the path you're supposed to be on. But I just remember they put me like on the paper machines my first day walking there. I wore a like extra large sized sorority t-shirt my first day. Why did I do that? Who knows? Like, truly, who knows? But so I'm like out on the machine floor, like earplugs, hard hat, steel toe boots, the whole thing. And I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? Like, truly, how did I end up here? This is you know, nobody in the place was like a young female, a 20-year-old female. Nobody looked anything like me. And to be honest with you, like I was reflecting on this recently, like the first month I sat in my office, like afraid to do anything, truly. And I was so intimidated by the machine, like getting lost in the machine. There's men all around that I don't know. It's a shift schedule. So like every 7 days, the shift changes. So like, it's not even the same men around all the time. You know, the bosses were all very intimidating to me. You know, now that they don't seem that like old, but when you're 20 and they're 40, you know, it seems like it's scary to like put yourself out there in that way.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was expected of me. I didn't know what they wanted me to work on. All those things kind of kept me in my office for a little while. And then kind of like an old farm boy from like central Alabama, he'd been working at the mill his whole life. I wrote about this recently in my newsletter. Like he actually walked with his like head cocked permanently because he'd been carrying like a mill radio on his shoulder since he was like 18. So like he'd been there for forever. Very funny guy. He came into my office one day and was like, "You're coming with me. Like, you know, we're not doing this thing anymore where you're pretending like you don't exist. Like you are coming with me and we're going to show you around." And I just remember like he took off onto the machine floor and like, I mean, hauling, like going faster than any person had ever walked ever in his life. Like, and then turns around and like waves at me, like, "Pick it up. If you're going to like hang with us, then come on, like show some initiative." And like something flipped in that moment for me. And then like, whatever it was, like the comfort of like him and like including me in that environment, I just started making friends with everybody after that. And I would like spend most of my days just like in the control rooms, like getting to know people, asking questions, pretending I cared about fishing and golf and like stuff like that, that all the guys wanted to talk about. And really, like, I mean, I was devastated to leave at the end of that time that I had there. And that was only like 4 months, but I'd built some really, really good relationships with the guys, you know, and then ended up coming back to a different department later on. But then when I came back full time after I'd graduated, I actually was the shift supervisor of that machine. So a lot of the guys that I'd gotten to know back then, you know, now I was helping to lead their crew. So it's kind of a full circle moment where it's like, you can directly see the value of like the relationships that you've built. And now like, not only did they, it, you know, if I'd just been any old random 22-year-old coming back to be their shift supervisor, I'm not sure that I would have been well accepted, but because I'd built relationships with them, it was kind of a seamless transition, you know? And I really like loved leading that crew. So there were definitely, I mean, difficulties that I'm more than willing to get into, but that, I think the first few years was very like, I look back on it with a lot of like gratitude for how I was kind of like accepted and brought into the mill culture. So that was like a good stepping stone for me.
It took someone to just take a step.
Yeah.
To like literally step a few feet in front of you and say, "Come on. You're coming with me."
Yeah.
It's amazing those little moments that actually change the trajectory.
Truly. Right? I mean, like, everything. Yeah. And I trusted that guy so much. Like, you know, I think I listened to everything that he said. And he was often like, "Hey, you come off across as like kind of standoffish. Like, you might want to work on that." He was like very honest with me about like, "What's it going to take for me to be accepted in this place?" And it's like, you need to be friendly and like pretend like you care about what they're talking about, or really care what they're talking about, whichever it is. But like, you know, and then I think he'd seen a lot of women come through there and saw what worked. And he was like willing to share that with me. And I'm like forever grateful for that, because I took a lot of the lessons that he taught me like with me for my whole career, for sure.
That's really powerful. I am curious, you know, when you think about, you talk about a lot about like, how do you fit into that environment? How do you kind of meld in?
Yeah.
Did that feel authentic to you? Or did you want to evolve what like that culture looked like over time? Or did it become a part of you? Like, what did that feel like?
Yeah, no, it didn't feel authentic to me, honestly. I think, you know, I taught myself how to assimilate into any room that I was in. Yep. And a lot of times that meant like listening to the joke that was maybe a bit off color and like not saying anything. And like, you know, looking back, I'm not super proud of that, but my number one goal was to be well received in all the rooms that I was in. And to be honest with you, in male dominated industries, like the one that I was in, that's actually very important for your success when early on for you to be able to do that. If you don't have the backing of the guys that you're working with, you're not going to move up. So as much as I hate to say that, like being liked was the most important thing, like in a lot of ways it was. And I think whether or not it felt genuine to me to act like one of the guys, I did actually, the result was that I built really great relationships with them. And so I think the path to get there is maybe not exactly what I would have loved for myself looking back, but these relationships, I still talk to a lot of the guys that I've worked with throughout my career, you know? So
yeah,
I would wear like overalls on outage days and like, you know, like do things that all the guys were doing. And like,
yeah,
you know, none of that felt maybe authentic to who I am, but I did feel like there is a little part of me that's like, I asked for this job. I signed a contract that I would do it. And part of it is becoming part of this culture, whatever that may look like. So that's kind of my journey with that.
Well, it's interesting because while it didn't feel authentic at first, you built genuine relationships. Like, it doesn't feel like you built genuine relationships. And I imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that over time, those people, like your authentic self could come out, you know, and did come out maybe more and more as, you know, you built those relationships and you felt comfortable. Like, I've been thinking a lot about, as I approach my next step in my career, it is so important to me to be who I am and allow that to be okay with the next part, the next place I go.
Yeah.
And during an interview process, of course I want to show myself, but there's such small periods of time and moments that, and a lack of context that these people have, you can't show it all, bare it all in an interview, you know, or the first time you're trying to, you know, gain, you know, the respect of a colleague, you've got to earn it piecemeal over time. So I've been thinking a lot about that. It's like, how do you show up as much as possible, authentic to you, and be confident in letting more and more of that shine and show and hold space over time?
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, it was like the difference between, okay, these guys like me, they enjoy me being in the control room with them, but then how do I build respect from them? And that's like a long-term game. Like, how do I get them to buy into the decisions that I make, even if they don't 100% agree with them? And that takes more time, and that does take your authentic self coming out in order to like make that happen. But once you gain the respect of them, they're yours. Like, they are on your team no matter what. So it is kind of the long game. And then, you know, through that process, I did find, especially in my last couple of years there, like I was able to fully be myself in the room and not feel like I had to assimilate in some way every single time I walked in the room. Like, I was leading the department. There are going to be hearts all over the notes for Valentine's Day, you know, like that's the way it's going to be.
Yes.
Y'all said y'all are okay with a female being the leader, so watch me be a female, you know, and then stepped into a lot of, I think, the power of what it is to be feminine. Like, and I kind of owned that a little bit more in my career as I felt like I gained the respect and kind of the space to do that. But it takes time. I think, like, yeah, you talk about like the interview process, like how do you show up like that right off the bat? Like, it's difficult for sure.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. And I imagine the environment I've been in tech sales, B2B tech sales for my career, is not as male dominated as the paper mill industry, but it was male dominated, maybe not as much. And I did. I mean, for so long, I was like, how could I want to be, I want to be a leader. I want to lead in my own way, but could I be me and be a sales leader? And early on in my leadership days, I think I tried to be what I saw, right? Like I tried to fit in with what I saw versus the last, I'd say 5 or 6 years, one, I had incredible leadership that encouraged me to be me. Yeah. And actually embraced me as they saw more parts of me. But I agree. It's like, it's that evolution. And frankly, like for me, it was the confidence in who I was, not just the environment around me. Yeah. So I can definitely relate to your experience there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a journey. Like, and you know, a lot of that's happening behind the scenes. You're not even like super cognizant of like when that shift occurs between, okay, they like me, now they respect me, now I can show up authentically as myself. Like, you know, there's no like playbook necessarily for how to make that happen. It's just, it's something like kind of a natural progression of, you know, growing up and like gaining confidence and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. And one of the things that dawns on me too, as I reflect on your journey is just this like curiosity this sense of curiosity as you're entering an environment to get to know people and see what it is that will spark connection. It feels like that came, while it might have not come super naturally or not right away being in your office those first 4 weeks, like as you started to get out there and get to know people, it seems like that really helped.
Yeah. And I think it's cliche and, you know, everyone's probably heard it, but I was told early on in my career, like, and this is a big thing with like young engineers, they're showing up that they have this sparkly degree and they think somehow that means something, and it doesn't. Nothing that you learned in college translates to a paper mill, unfortunately, like nothing at all. And like, what I was told was like, they don't care how much you know, unless they know how much you care. So like, I tried to take that on even until like my department manager days, when I knew like head to toe the entire system that I was in charge of, like every piece of it, every piece of equipment, I knew the flows and everything, but people still wanted me to show them that I cared about what they knew. And I would sit down with them and watch them teach me like the whole system from start to finish, because they wanted to know that I cared like about that they had the knowledge to share with me and that they were willing to take the time to do that. And I would sit there, they'd tell me wrong things. Oh, really? Like, let's talk about, you know, that's fine. Like, I'm willing to do that if it means that, you know, that I care about you in some way, you know, that I'm willing to build this relationship with you based on like mutual respect. And like, that phrase like always stuck with me kind of throughout my whole career. I tried to like lead in that way. For sure.
Making people feel seen and heard. That's come up really consistently in the conversations I'm having with people that have progressed and led in their careers and been really, really successful. It's making people, making the time to connect with the human and making sure that they feel seen and valued. So,
and as a leader, if you can do that, everything else becomes easier. Like that's, to me, that's a fact.
Agreed. So you came back as a supervisor, you grew through this organization at a pretty amazing rate. You even mentioned before having a leadership role of over 100 people underneath you. You mentioned challenges along the way. What stands out as kind of some of the biggest moments of challenges? And did you ever think, gosh, this isn't for me, or want to quit before you got to maybe the highest highs within your career there?
Yeah, I did. We did leave the original company we were at one point and jump to another. So that was, you know, that always helps as far as just context goes. We didn't stay within the same company the whole time. Different paper mill, same stuff. But but yeah, I think like some of the biggest challenges for me was I very much lacked skills that are like necessary for like talking to bosses and getting what you need out of a conversation. Like, that was never anything that I'd ever learned before, was like, okay, how do I enter this one-to-one and not just get told to keep doing what you're doing? Like, how do I actually leave this one-to-one with some actionable, like, tips for what I can do better for the next year? And if I'd never was, and then, you know, I was chronically underpaid. This is like the number one thing that I'll work on with any female engineer, is like, how do we get you paid market value or above? And that's near and dear to my heart, because I was called greedy for asking for, you know, equal pay, not even above equal pay, just equal pay, the pay designation for the job that I was doing. I got called greedy for that. My husband had, you know, had supervisors on his team that I was at the same level with. So I knew what their salary was. They were making tens of thousands above what I was for doing the exact same job. You know, all of those things like built a lot of resentment in me for the industry in general. So it wasn't like personal to me. Every female that I knew and that I work with now is facing the exact same things. So that was difficult for me to continue trying to get past this hurdle that they don't value me as much as they value somebody else. And I worked so, 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 so hard. Like, I mean, it wasn't for lack of, you know, I worked as hard as I possibly could have, you know, calls on the weekends, frequently coming in off of vacation days, even like worked all the time.
Yeah. So, and you shouldn't even have to justify it for those things. You were exactly. doing the job. Like, you were doing, it's so natural. Yeah.
But also there are people who think, well, women don't work as hard in those industries as the men do. And I'm here to tell you, I was climbing into equipment at 8 months pregnant. Like, so that's not even, you know, worth arguing, but yeah, so that like grated on me over the years of like never feeling like my work was good enough for them to get showed that my, you know, the compensation could equal the value that I was bringing to the table. And then, you know, at some point, I know that I was young. I was 28 when I was leading 120 people. And, you know, I was tired of getting, I guess, jumped over in the line of command because I wasn't, you know, they didn't see me as an authority. You know, I was tired of having to always prove myself when I felt like I'd already done that. I don't need to keep going down this path. And I got to a point where I wasn't willing to do any of that stuff. You know, I've had decisions that I made questioned publicly in multiple different environments, and then told, you know, behind the scenes, oh, that actually was a good idea. You know, like, just, I was so tired of having to navigate that constantly. So when I got pregnant with my daughter and I was looking at trying to like maybe do something different in my career next, it came at a good time for me to just be like, I need a break. I need to figure out what I want to do next, because right now, like, I have so much resentment built up over from all these things I've had to deal with, and I can get through it because I love what I do and I love the people that I work with. But if I have the opportunity to maybe like pivot and try something else, let me see what that is. And if not, I'll come back and do this again. But it all kind of like came together at the right time for me to like just hit the pause button and see what it was. And I will also say, like, to answer your other question, like, I for years tried to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. I was never satisfied, like, with, I'm going to be a paper mill employee the rest of my life. I was shadowing like doctors and like, you know, thinking maybe I would be a chef, like literally anything that maybe sparked my interest. I would go and see if that was actually a viable option for me. Like, I wasn't afraid to do that. So yeah.
It's so unfortunate that resentment, that those things happened to build up that resentment because of how much it clearly impact you had made within the organization. And also I am a believer that you then had the space to kind of figure out what it was mm-hmm. that you did want to do, because some of Absolutely. The other things you had explored weren't, you know, getting you all, you know, excited to run at a problem or a challenge or a goal. You talked a little bit about leading up to it and it kind of being the perfect timing. Was there anything else that, like, when you were thinking about taking a pause?
Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, I'm in a pause right now. Mm-hmm. I know so many women, particularly men too, Just other people too, but women that are, you know, just ready to take a pause. But it's, I mean, it's scary to do it, especially in this market. What are some of the things you thought about in terms of planning for that pause and actually making the decision to do it?
Yeah, practically speaking, we didn't have a lot of options as far as just logistically how we would manage having a child and both of our careers because of the hours that we were putting in. And for me, you know, it was really important for me not to, once I came, if I can't come back with my kid, I was very nervous that my capacity was going to be at a lower level so that my other teammates were going to have to pick up the slack, that I couldn't no longer really operate at the same level that I had been before. And I hated the idea of that. I kind of like have debunked that in my head a little bit more now, but this is kind of another, you know, issue with male dominated industries is I was the first pregnant manager ever to come through that place. Not like I had anybody to like bounce these ideas off of. I really did not know what to expect and didn't have anybody kind of to talk to about that at all. So I was worried about that. Like logistically, we were working 45 minutes away from our house and 60 hour weeks, usually always called in on the weekends, middle of the night, a few nights a week. So it's like, how do you add, my husband and I were both doing that. How do you add like a newborn baby into the mix with all of that going on? You know, it didn't feel possible. I don't know that it was going to be possible. I was offered like a desk job basically where I could have had a little bit more flexibility and not the weekend tasks and not, you know, nighttime calls and stuff. But I looked at that and the whole time I'm going to be sitting at this desk, I'm going to be wishing I was out there doing the job that I had before. So I appreciated it. I very much did. And, you know, that they, you know, created or like presented that job to me, but it was not in alignment with what I wanted out of my career. And I refused to kind of do that while still 45 minutes away from my kid all day long. So at the end of the day, it was very much like, okay, somebody has to stay home with her or we hire a full-time nanny and half my salary goes to her. So, you know, that was kind of like, practically speaking, like the only option for me was to, and that's, I think that the LinkedIn post you mentioned earlier was kind of speaking about that. I was no less driven in my career than, you know, than when I had a kid. That didn't change anything. I think there's like a big misconception that women, when women take career breaks to be stay-at-home moms, because they can't cut it in the career, in their career and their professional life. And that's often the last reason truly of why they may need to take this break. So I think just like shedding the light on, like, it's very normal for women to genuinely not be able to have it all. Like, I think we want to pretend like we can, or like society tells us we should be able to.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Yeah. So I just decided to stay home.
And what was that like? So she's two now. And since then you've started your business. So you haven't been, you know, on pause per se for the whole time, but like, What did that feel like? I mean, I'm genuinely curious for a lot of reasons. One is a selfish one, which is this pause has been really challenging and like really pushed me in terms of thinking about my, what my worth is and where I contribute to our family and stuff like that. So I'm just curious what your experience was taking that pause when you were in it. Maybe post like the very early postpartum days, which is like a freaking blur. Yeah. At least it was for me.
Yeah. I think just to be brutally honest with you, it was not fun. Like I got so much validation from the work that I did. Like I said, I built incredible relationships with my team, with my boss, everything. Like I was at the top of my game when I quit my job. Like I was solving problems for our department that had been issues for years and years and years. Like truly, like couldn't have been more validated by what I was doing by that job. And then you go home and your husband's still working 60 hours a week and you have a tiny baby who's not telling you that you're doing a good job ever. She's not saying that. You don't feel like you're doing a good job because they cry all the time. Like, you know. That identity shift for me was the hardest I've ever been through in my life, I think, was just like, where is my value in this world if it's not from other people telling me that I'm doing a good job all the time, you know? And I mean, where is it? And how do I find it now when I'm not planning on picking up another job? I was so embarrassed to say that I was a stay-at-home mom. I started a master's program at Auburn, I'm almost done with, but like whenever anybody would say like, oh, what do? You stay at home or, well, I'm in school. Like that would be the first thing that I said, you know? And then, and also I do a little bit of side work for my husband's company. And then I, you know, I could never just own like, yes, I decided to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm a chemical engineer. I worked my way up, like making, you know, contributing financially to our family. And I gave all that up to stay at home with this little baby, and that's worth it. And that's valuable too. It took me a long time to own that, to be able to be proud of that choice that I'd made. And now, like, I think one of the most beautiful things I see on like LinkedIn is when people have like parenting break on their like the list of jobs that they've had. Like, yes, why are we not owning this? It is a job. The skills that you learn at home with your kids are transferable to the workplace more than anybody even gives credit for. So just to say, you know, it was a doozy. It was really, really hard for me. Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. It's so funny too, because I in my gut, I look at friends and family and, you know, coworkers that have made the decision, or from the start or after they had gone into the more of the corporate workplace, mm-hmm. to be a full-time parent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a full-time CEO of the home, of the family. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of respect I have for that is enormous.
I know. Yeah.
And the amount of respect I have for it after having two kids is enormous. And I felt the same way you did.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't know. I think that's like a lot of what I'm figuring out too is, mm-hmm. you know, the two things that you said. One, I am genuinely proud that I'm taking this time for myself and for my family. Why can't I say that more confidently? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And two, the seeking validation instead of how do I validate myself and the worth I bring to the world, like the value I bring to the world in a day to day that has nothing to do with how I contribute financially or having a corporate title. I still want that. I love my career. Yeah. Like I love my corporate career.
And that's why I found my way back to this. Like
yes.
It's very important to me to have like professional success in my life. And yeah. I have no judgment against people who don't feel okay. Like that's fine.
No. Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. So you launched your business.
Yeah.
While you were, you know, you had taken this pause.
Mm-hmm.
And you are now helping and empowering other women engineers
mm-hmm.
to really own their journey and be confident in who they are. Can you talk a little bit about Climbing Tree Consulting?
Yeah.
What was the catalyst to start it and what you're up to?
Yeah, I had, so my master's is in industrial and organizational psychology. And a lot of those individuals go and work for consulting agencies where they, you know, go help basically organizational development, you know, on a big scale with companies. And I was interested in that to a point, but I'm more focused on individual development. And so when I thought about what I wanted to do after I graduated from my master's, I really decided like that I wanted to maybe try something on my own. I'm like 100% cool with 100% risk. Like I'm just not risk averse at all. So it's like, why not just try this on my own and see what happens. I decided kind of on a whim to just go ahead and start it and at least just start getting my name out there and marketing before I even got my master's, because I was like, they're not really teaching me that much anyways, to be honest with you. I think I can do this. So my original business plan was to be a full-on consultant for companies. So like go in, put in plans and goals in place to help these companies support and retain their female engineers, and then kind of on the side of that would be the individual coaching piece with those females. And I tried that for 2 or 3 months, pitching to everybody that I knew in the paper industry and others that would listen to me. And I did not book a single person, not one client. And during that time, that's like the truth of entrepreneurship right there. Mm-hmm. So I got a business coach, and like, basically what the feedback had been was like, this is unproven. Why would we hire you to do this when you've never worked with any clients? Like, but if, you know, so basically my plan was then to switch and try the individual coaching. You know, it's very much like there's one person making that decision versus an entire lead team that of men that I'm trying to convince to hire me. So, I started the like individual consulting back in like September, or coaching back in September, and then kind of narrowed down my focus just back to kind of where I started this thing, which was female engineers. I really think that that's like who I'm most positioned to help, because I did navigate that industry and pretty successfully. So, I mean, it's really a lot of just, I designed the program basically based on what I needed back then when I had no mentors to speak of, like, not that I didn't want one, but there weren't any. So, now I get to do that, and it's awesome. I get like, I miss so much like the manufacturing environment. So I'm like living vicariously through hearing like the stories of their day to day, while also getting to like very practically help them work through common struggles that they face in the industry. So
giving back, taking the knowledge and all the experience that you gained and really pouring that into others makes a huge difference. I imagine the principles in your work are very customized, like, and how you coach someone are so customized to the each person and their goals and their struggles. But I would be curious, are there, in all the people that you've been engaged with, are there common themes that are coming up? And, you know, how are you, what are some of the kind of high level things you focus on with your coaching business?
And kind of through working with the women, I've developed the coaching program as I've gone, and basically based on what it is that those common themes are. So like the number one thing is like how to speak up for yourself, like how to have confidence in rooms that no one looks like you, you know, how do you do that? And that's like very, you know, let's practice it. Like, here are things you can just very practically do, like changing the way you speak so that you sound more authoritative, like editing your emails so that you take all these qualifiers out of it that don't mean anything, like very practical things that you can practice that build those that confidence skill.
Yep.
Everybody needs to know how to negotiate a salary, especially if you're a female engineer or like a woman in STEM who is chronically underpaid. How to have an effective one-to-one and get what you need out of it. I think the mindset piece is really important. So women like to get in their own way a lot. They have all these negative doubts and self-talks that are going on in the background that are keeping them from taking action in their life. So like, that's the number one thing we're like teaching, you know, how to get over that, and teaching you how to rewrite those kind of like neural pathways that are always telling you that you're not good enough or not accomplishing enough or whatever it may be. And then, you know, if my client is a mom, almost all moms suffer with like not prioritizing themselves. And so like teaching them practical ways to do that, that makes them ditch the mom guilt and helps them realize that they're actually better at everything that they do when they start prioritizing themselves and start being a little bit more selfish with their time. And so, yeah, those are kind of some of the things that we go over that kind of come up with every single client, it feels like.
So much goodness there.
Yeah.
So much.
It's fun. I love it. It's my dream.
Yeah, that's so. You light up when you talk about it. It's really cool to listen to. And I have the pleasure of being able to see you too. So I can tell that you have this passion that is undeniable. What's your vision for Climbing Tree Consulting? What, mm-hmm. you know, what are you biting off next?
This is my downfall is I have so many ideas. I mean, so many. I think just from, you know, short term, I've got some courses that I want to make available at like a more accessible price point than my coaching program. And that'll be like, you know, beginner's guide to navigating male-dominated industries, and intermediate and advanced. So like, I would love to have those out in the next 6 months, maybe. And then long-term, I really do see this as my original vision, which is like a consulting agency going back into these industries specifically to support females in STEM and helping companies put in place inclusive practices that support their diverse talent. That's my number one thing on my list. But I think in order to do that, I have to have more experience doing what I'm doing now. So that's my 2 to 5 year plan is for this to be a company. So yeah.
Well, I'm so excited to cheer you on and advocate for you and your work along the way. I'm so grateful. This has been such a natural conversation. Yeah. And I feel like so much of what you've said, people can relate to in various, no matter what space or industry or stage they're in their life. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Few quick questions to wrap it up.
Okay.
For us to get to know you a little bit better, you can go like a word or a sentence.
Oh my goodness, that's a tough one.
You want to come back to it?
Yeah.
We could go best advice you've ever received.
I think I hit on it earlier that people don't care how much you know unless they know how much you care. That's the best advice I've ever received. Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And who has had the most influence or impact on you becoming you?
I would do a shout out to my therapist who I've been with probably since 2020. I've had two along the journey, but they have had the most impact on me finding who I am in this world and being confident in that for sure. Shameless plug for therapy right there.
I will second that plug and I agree.
Yeah.
What would you tell yourself entering, you know, making that college drop down to chemical engineering? What would you have told yourself at that time that you know now?
Be open to the possibilities of what could come from that and not think that just because you choose that on a drop down, that means you're a chemical engineer for life. Like, you don't know what this life is going to take you, where it'll lead you. And that's exciting. That's not something to shy away from.
I love that. And what do you want Delilah, your beautiful baby, to look back and say about mommy, how mommy was when she was growing up?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is I want her to see that my purpose in life is truly trying to make, when I tell her she can be whatever she wants to be, like, I'm actually doing work that makes that possible. Because right now with the state of kind of how things are and like what I experience, I don't know that I would want her to be a female in some of these industries. And like, I want to do work that, you know, when I tell her she can be whatever she wants to be, like, I truly do mean that. So, you know, that would mean the world to me if she saw kind of like a powerful mother figure, like paving the way for her a little bit.
You are certainly doing that. And excited to, that was a beautiful way to put a pin on it, to put a bow on it rather.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really, really grateful to know you and excited to stay in touch.
Yes, likewise.
And that's a wrap on this one. Thank you so much for being here and spending your time with us. I know how busy you are and that it was a choice to click on the Balance is Bullshit podcast and spend some time with us. So I really, really appreciate that. If you enjoyed the conversation today and got value out of it, there's so much you can do to not only support us, but potentially add value to someone else. Shout from the rooftops what you loved. Give us a rating or a review. Like us, follow us, subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts. And don't forget to share this episode with someone that you think would love it too. We'll see you again soon.